Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, my name is Jimmy Olsen. I'm a writer-director and I'm here with Chris Gordon from Hellblazer Biz.
Everyone, I have the honour and the privilege and the company of director and filmmaker Jimmy Olsen today. So, hey, Jimmy, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
No, you're welcome. As we're going to be talking about, obviously, here for your latest short film, which is Alive, which I have seen as well. It's a great film. But obviously, find out a bit more about yourself and where your inspirations are from and things like that. And yeah, just basically have a little chat.
Cool. Sounds good.
Excellent. So, I mean, obviously, filmmaking, it's not the most common thing to go into. So, when did you realise this was where you wanted to end up spending your life?
Yeah, well, I have this, you know, really vivid memory of it. I was 15, and it was a summer night, and I came back to my home with this VHS, I think, of the film Breaking the Waves by Lars von Trier. Mm-hmm. And I watched it, and I remember, you know, the sun coming up, and I was, you know, my jaw was on the floor. And I realized that, you know, films are more than entertainment. And straight after that, I was really angry with myself because I've wasted so much time on shit films. So I started to watch a lot more art house films. And basically just trying to learn and figure out that you can actually do this for a living. And then, you know, it took me a while. I moved to a new city and studied, and then I took it up again when I was 21, 22. I did some amateur films with some friends.
Yeah.
And actually I wanted to be an actor when I was like 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't a complete idiot when it came to films. I watched a lot of films but it was that experience with Lars von Trier's film that made me want to explore the fact that you can make a living out of it.
Excellent, so, yeah. Excellent, brilliant. It's nice to see it's something with more of the. It's very much more of the art of film as well, right? Like you say, rather than these like blockbusters and stuff, it's nice to see that it's the very much yeah. very the art form, which is where you've explored it from. And you have, I mean, if, you know, looking at the shorts, I can see very much the depth that you go to when you're doing your filmmaking, which is really nice and refreshing to see. It's not I'll say refreshing to see it's different. It's not refreshing in the fact that it hits you really hard, but yeah, which is what the idea is. It's very refreshing to see that different take on how a film is made rather than, rather than just going out there and making something that I'm not going to trivialize everyone's films, but exactly.
Well, you know, I think I enjoy a lot of genres. I enjoy, you know, when I was a kid, I watched a lot of Spielberg and you know, the classic blockbusters, and I enjoyed it very much. And I still do enjoy them, some of them at least, you know, the ones that still holds up. But it was kind of refreshing to me as well to see a different type of storytelling. And it came in the right age because I was, you know, beginning to learn how to be a grown up and when I started, one of my biggest directors is Andrei Tarkovsky and Ingmar Bergman, And I'm a huge fan. I've got, several tattoos and everything. But I was 22 when I watched my first Bergman film. And I think that was a perfect age, because some people say, oh, it's so dark and difficult. And he's really not, But if you're too young to watch his films, but that goes for many, many films and filmmakers, obviously, unless it's like E.T., which is super universal. I think you have to start in certain ages for certain kind of films and filmmakers to really appreciate them. Yeah.
I do agree. I mean, I did German. I studied German at university, and we did a film course there. So a lot of the films we studied were like Fritz Lang, Wim Wenders, Werner Herzog. So these were very powerful.
Did you watch any Rainer Werner Fassbinder films?
Yes, I can't remember them, but I know. Yes, I do know the name. Yes, we did watch them. they are. I mean, they're very similar. Like I say, they're all like a particular genre. Symbolism is important in your work as well. Yeah. And I think like these guys, like Fritz Lang, Metropolis, was one of the most symbolic movies of all time, ever.
It still holds up.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, you can just put it to today's society and look, there you go.
it's almost 100 years old, man. It's crazy.
Shocking, isn't it? In 100 years, ethos of, the rich and the working class and the rich class, the upper class, has not changed in 100 years. That is, it's very eye opening when you think of it like
it
that.
Is,
He was very ahead of his time. I kind of studied those kinds of directors as well when I was at uni, and it was fascinating watching their films. It was really good. Some of them, they're just like, even Leni Riefenstahl from obviously the wartime and her propaganda films, obviously.
But even though if
you take that concept away from it, you can see it's the symbolism of, I think, was it Wings of Desire? Was that the one? Or was it when it flew in over the clouds?
Triumph des Willens.
That's the one, Triumph des Willens. Yes, that's obviously very political.
she was, even if she made propaganda film for the wrong people, she really made them look better.
Yes. In a sense. exactly, and and that just shows how much powerful film, how a good filmmaker can actually make something. Yeah. Brilliant. I mean, you actually started out in advertising as well, so I guess that gave you also very practical knowledge, because obviously you studied and trained in qualified to get where you've got, but I guess working in that area gave you that practical knowledge and practical experience which then helped you.
Yeah, I went to this film school here in Stockholm for 2 years, and during my training or education, I started to work, with commercials and music videos and stuff, like doing most of the stuff behind camera, like, production manager, first AD and editor, and producing, and you did a lot of stuff, even in art department. Mm-hmm. And I worked for like 1.5 years without any pay, just to learn the chops, basically, or understand how it works, and to get to know people and get to know the platforms, and slowly, when I got the chance to direct something, I took it, and that's also a thing when you get the chance to direct anything, because I already knew that I wanted to work as a director, but it sometimes if you get the chance of doing anything and there's no money in the production, it's like, that's frustrating, but you can only do your best. And so I did a lot of, stuff, different stuff, commercial stuff and short films and stuff like that. for a number of years, and I was in the commercial business for, well, I still am a little bit, but I was there 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I started working as a full-time director 10 years ago, because I didn't want to, you know, be stuck in a realm of doing most of the stuff. I wanted to be known for being a director. So I took that leap 2010. And it was tough, you know, because the first 2 years was really tough because you had to say no to well-paid jobs, you know, as a first AD or production manager. Mm-hmm. And I made up my mind. So after that, it's been, you know, ups and downs, but I'm still here.
Excellent. And you came out with your first film, Repressed, wasn't it? That was
that was my first professional film, you could say.
Yeah. It wasn't your first film, obviously. But yeah.
So
in that respect. So I mean, that was about a couple of friends on a bus, I believe, and they were just repressed memory comes back when they see some people on the bus.
Exactly.
Yeah, so
that was actually a memory of mine that happened to me. I don't know if you've seen the film, but it's about this guy who sees a really, really drunken girl, a teenager, and a bunch of guys, and he wants to do something about it because he thinks that something bad is going to happen to her. Mm-hmm. If she walks home with that guy or whatever. So, and it's a tricky because it's a one take thing on the bus for 15 minutes and we stop the bus, we get out. And so it's a bit tricky to shoot. And it's 360. So that was a memory, and most of my films are based on things I've seen and or read, because it's slice of life, really. If I made a comedy once about a weird bank robbery, and I read this, couple of lines in a newspaper about this man in Texas, obviously. He wanted to rob a bank.
Right.
And he wanted to rob the bank for like $2,000, mm-hmm. which is funny, because why don't you aim higher? But the bank clerk convinced him to take a loan instead. So that was funny. So when I read that, I need to write something about it. I need to do something with this. It was quite funny. that's my take on making films. I could see you know the smallest thing, mm-hmm. and could be could be a guy or woman falling asleep on the bus in a certain way or make a certain sound, then that's a character feature, that's a character flaw, and then you can start building things. So that's basically how I work.
Oh, excellent. Very interesting to hear that. So in that respect then, moving there, how did you come up with the idea for Alive? Very powerful.
I listened to this podcast last year. Mm-hmm. I was going back from Italy. I was a jury member of a film festival, so I was coming back to Stockholm, and I was at the Munich airport waiting for my flight to Stockholm, and I listened to this podcast, and there was a story there about this guy in a wheelchair, and he wanted to have an escort. And he told his assistant, when the escort comes, you can't be here. So the assistant had to wait outside in a coffee shop. And and not knowing who was coming or or when or every or what he or she looked like.
Yeah.
So when I listened to that, I thought that was intriguing. There was some drama there. I just felt it. And I needed to write it down. So I wrote it really, really, really quickly. Yeah. like 1.5 hours or something. I've written the first draft.
Yeah,
which is weird. It's too quick. So it was so quick that I didn't think that would this. I just needed to cleanse my system of this idea or thought. Mm-hmm. But it turned out it was quite all right in the end. But that was that's where the idea came, how it came about.
Fantastic. And I mean, you are very interested, like we've already discussed, you're very much interested in the inner depths of a person as well. And obviously with Alive, that is very obvious because you've got Victoria who is, I wouldn't say trapped. Well, she is kind of trapped in her body. You know, she's, you know, her mind's perfectly active there. And it's obviously, it probably reflects a lot of people around the world without, you know, who are like that. And it is a very great film. I love the relationship between her and the carer as well, by the way. That's, you know, which is a lovely friendship that they seem to have there.
Where, yeah, yeah, sure.
And obviously, hearing where it's come from, you can hear that story where it's, you know, it's great to hear. So obviously, it seems very much you do want to tell the story about that in that inner person rather than something taken at face value, which is what I think where we touched before. So that's...
Yeah, yeah, you're right. And when I wrote it, I Victoria, she's suffering from this brain damage that she got from an accident, which we don't really talk about. But I got the question earlier. How do you write for someone who's disabled? I was like, no, I don't write any differently than I would write if it was an able-bodied person. It's still a person who can't really move or as such. And so it's two ordinary people, you know, having a relationship. But I wanted to explore. There's a theme there. I wanted to explore how we as able-bodied people, how we see disabled people, mm-hmm. how we, you know, pass judgment on them, even if it's not, even if we don't mean to, but we still do because we are taking care of, subconsciously, exactly. So Ida, the caregiver, she's like the audience. She's like us. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to play on a little moral dilemma. Who are you to decide for other people? Even because she's a grown up, but on the other hand, what happens if something bad happens? Whose fault is it, and who's responsible? I wanted to play around with that. I think for me, it's kind of therapeutic because I think when I was a teenager before my brain was fully developed at, I don't know, 25, I might have had, you know, some prejudice against disabled people. I'm not ashamed to say it because I think everyone has or have had. So it was, you know, therapeutic for me to make this film to, you know, get rid of the past, really.
Wow, fantastic. I was going to say definitely with the prejudice. I remember when I grew up in Watford near London, there was a gentleman, sad actually, I think he was only 21 or 22, but his parents had brought him a car for his 21st, I think it must have been 21st birthday, and someone drove straight into him, wrote the car off, and it basically caused him severe brain damage and motor body issues with being able to use his body as it should. And he'd walk, he'd really be determined to walk, which he did, but he'd walk at a stagger. And it used to break my heart because my dad was a minister and he knew this guy. I knew the story because my dad had told me so. There's a lovely guy called Robert, the man was. And you'd see him staggering to the library and stuff. So, I'd try and offer help purely because I knew the story. But people would look at him and just look down on him thinking he was drunk because he would fall over or he'd stagger and stuff. And this is going back. How old am I? Oh my gosh, this is going back like 30 odd years now, even longer. So yeah, so it was very much, things weren't known and people were, they would just look down. So it's very good to see this film where you breach that and you approach that subconscious thoughts of where people view people. They're just people with, who might be, not be able to use their body like anyone else can. It doesn't mean they're not less of a person, so which is true.
Yeah, it's all about aesthetics, isn't it? Because if you see a person who has issues with her or body or struggles to move or speak, then you automatically, I think, you think that the person inside is like that. Mm-hmm. Which is, obviously not true. I agree. I think it's important to try to get over that. They have the same yearns, or they want the same things that we all do. Mm-hmm. Obviously.
Yeah. And with Victoria especially, obviously there's such a wit in the character that comes across when, I want to borrow your boyfriend. It does. It
didn't make me sure. Half true, half funny. I don't know.
Because the truth always said in jest. Yeah. But it was, and the casting was superb with that film as well. Very symbolic you do like the close-up facial shots, I've noticed as well. You seem to work very much with the actors and their facial expressions, especially in this one. It works so well because obviously with the character of Victoria, that's pretty, in that respect, that's probably one of the main areas you can focus and communicate through. That is a very, very big, as far as I saw it, that was a very big theme throughout the film of being able to focus and show the person, to show Victoria's inner self through her expression.
Yeah, and I agree. And going back to Bergman, Ingmar Bergman said the greatest invention is the close-up, which is true. In a way, and especially like you said, she can control her face and her expressions, and we need to be closer to her to really see her and what she wants and what she means by it. And I think it's super important to work closely and to work with I would say I'm a big fan of subtext. I'm a big fan of playing it small, and acting underacting almost. When a certain look or a wink or a grimace, something that represents the whole scene. Could be. It's not in this one, I would say, but still, it's the basic rule to show, don't tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's very, very true. And I think some of it, there are parts in the film, I think there are, with little smirks that especially after borrowing your boyfriend, she's just got this little smirk on her mouth.
Exactly.
Which tells the whole thing of how she's thinking. How did you cast for it as well? Because they were all very superb, especially Ava Johansson, very superb.
Yeah, she's brilliant. Yeah. So I already, from when I wrote it, I knew that I wanted to work with Madeline Martin in place Ida, the caregiver, because I've known her for a couple of years, and And I've seen her in lots of films, so she's very talented. So, and then me and the producer, we were talking about trying to cast a disabled person who is an actor. And in Stockholm, we don't have much of disabled people who works as an actor. And yeah. I needed to have a good actor. Mm-hmm. Obviously, and so we searched. I had some auditions that wasn't right fit, and then Madeline sent me a picture of Ava, and I had seen her before. She does mostly theater, right. But I had seen her in a short a couple of years ago when she played a man. She played a very famous man in Sweden, one of the biggest actors we have in Sweden. She played him.
Okay.
And she did that, you know, that was very funny. So she's a great character actress. So we brought her in for an audition and just, you know, played around with the text, me, her, and Madeline. And I had this gut feeling that, yeah, let's try this, because I saw in her that she wanted to be really engaged and do her research and, you know, work hard. That's how I found her for this part, and she's a perfect fit. And then we had lots of talks and meetings during, you know, the pre-production and research. And rehearsed the text, and yeah, we did a lot of work. So when we got to the shoot, we were really, really well prepared. And there's a guy called Joel, who plays the boyfriend of Ida. He's also an old friend of both Madeline and Ava from the theater. And Madeline wanted to have someone, because there's a sex scene in it, and she wanted to have someone that she feels secure with. So she knew him, and he's brilliant. You know, he's a small part, but he does the job perfectly, I think.
He does, yeah, definitely. Especially in the first opening scene, because like we talked about before, about how people have that subconscious where you treat someone. He was speaking slowly to her. I noticed that. He was talking like she, you know, like she couldn't hear him properly or couldn't understand him, and it was obviously subconscious for the character to do that, but he didn't know he was doing it. He was trying to be nice and polite, which he was, but it was just obviously you could see deliberately slow that down to, you know, just because she was in a wheelchair, and that's
exactly. And it's like you treat someone like a kid because they are the same height as a kid. And that's weird, you know. I try to treat my kids as adults. I talk to them as an adult, because I don't know what's right or wrong. Am I a good parent or not? I don't know. Let's find out in like 10, 15 years to see.
excellent. I mean, this has been doing the film. There's a lot of festivals as well. I know you've got four wins. Is it four wins now? And you've many more nominations, I think. Or is it?
On IMDb, it's four wins, but I think it's seven, because there's a couple of smaller festivals that aren't IMDb qualified, apparently. The film has been really successful so far, even though it's a pandemic in the world, and so a lot of festivals are. Most of them, all of them are online or hybrid forms. But in June, I won this huge award in Huesca Film Festival in Spain, which is an awesome festival and Oscar qualifying.
Yeah, one. I was about to mention that as well. That's really, really good for you.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, I'm really pleased with that. And then Ava won Best Actress at Short Shorts in Tokyo, which is huge as well.
Yeah.
So it's I can't complain. I'm really, really happy. And then now, a couple of days ago, we won Best International at Holly Shorts. So
brilliant!
Yeah, it's overwhelming.
I can imagine, and it does deserve it. You know, I'm not being sycophantic. The film does deserve it because it's really good subject matter. It's a really well made and thought out subject matter as well of how you put it across. And it must be difficult in such a short film to actually get the point made, because you've really got very limited time to get people to actually warm to the characters. But you do in Alive. You really do warm to Victoria.
Oh, thank you.
And Ada. It's great. It's especially towards the end as well, with a little, again, that smile she has at the end, where she, I'm not going to ruin it for people who have not seen it, but her little punchline at the end, just happening stitches laughing.
In one line, she's taking back control, basically.
Exactly. And,
yeah, I wrote that last line, and I couldn't decide if it's funny, silly, or you know, good. But I decided that it's all at once.
Yeah, it does, and you're right. It sums up the entire thing. And obviously, you were in there as well as a.
It's a low budget film, and we didn't have time or the effort to find someone scary or creepy when we have someone already in the team. So
I did notice your picture on the Tinder profile with your arms out.
Yeah. It is what it is, you know. If you
I didn't mean that in a derogatory way. It's great to see that you were in
part of it. No. It's all right.
Very Hitchcock was, you know, Hitchcockian, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, now, in the last film, I play a Nazi because, you know, look at me. I'm super white. I'm super, you know, Nordic, and I have no hair.
Fair enough. I've played that myself. I've done a couple of I was in a documentary as an extra, and I did a film about three four years ago where I had a speaking part as well in an independent film in the UK. I loved it. That's all. I'd love to get back in. I'd really love to do more. But I've got that horrible bit of switching between my main job, because I'm the main only income for the family. Yeah. And then just giving it all up to follow my pen, follow the dream. I'm just, you know, I'm at that stage, like, I want to, but I can't. But yeah, no, I did, when I filmed the documentary, this was going back about 15 years back, I was in a reenactment group. So I filmed Michael Sheard, who played Admiral Ozzel in Empire Strikes Back.
And
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, he was Hitler in that, but he was playing Hitler. It was a documentary about Hitler escaping to the Andes. There's a picture of me stood next to him, and I've got a photo of me stood next to him in like a little German stormtrooper outfit. So I show my friends, but then I say, please, that is actually a film, it's got nothing. But yeah, it was good.
Yeah, cool.
You got to do it sometimes. I think you got to film. You got to go. Whatever you can do to get into the film.
well, as I said, you know, I wanted to be an actor when I was a teenager, but then I realized I outer body experience, because I realized how I think I look in front of camera, and that was scary. So I gave that up and went behind the camera instead. But now, in the recent time, I've done a couple of mockumentaries, like funny pieces, about where I play a journalist. And I did the last one. It was about Pippi Longstocking today, she's doing today when she's like in her 60s, and I've done two other ones also with, you know, famous fictitious figures, characters. So that's really funny to play a journal, because I basically play myself, obviously. but I'm walking around and I'm finding Pippi Longstocking, and I have questions for her, and my questions are sincere, you know. Yeah. But she answers, and it's a fun way of treating and the mockumentary genre. I have that side too, you know, the super silly side. But it's fun. It's fun.
Oh yeah, it's great to have that side. I think, you know, life without humor is boring, so.
Yeah, that's a tattoo, man.
I was going to ask you what some of your tattoos mean, because you've got some really nice ones on your
Yeah, you know, I've have the Russian army. So this is a Stalker, the Tarkovsky's 1979 sci-fi, and here's The Mirror, and here's Le Fils. So Darden Brothers are my, you know, on my favorite ones. Mm. You know, Le Fils is from 2002, I think. The Sun in English, I think it is.
Yeah,
and then Persona, Ingmar Bergman's best film, I think. Yeah, so I have you know, full portrait of Ingmar Bergman. You know, I've
oh cool.
it's silly.
No, it sounds great. It's excellent. That kind of wraps me up for the minute. So I mean, I'm going to change view quickly. From my perspective, is there anything that you'd like to say, Jimmy, to people who are watching or listening this now?
You want, you can follow me on, you know, Insta and Twitter. It's Regisor Jimmy, R-E-G-I-S-S-O-R Jimmy with an Y. Just, you know, see what I'm up to if you're interested.